Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, as always, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. If you've followed my radio shows, podcasts, books, or columns for any length of time, you know exactly where I stand on the state of our nation today. I have not exactly been shy on the subject. Since I also write fiction, and fiction with a message, you might think the very brief, short story I am about to read to you over the air is something I penned myself. I did not. I cannot take credit for this. I would like to give credit where the credit is due, but truthfully, I don't know who wrote this. It's been circulating the internet like so many things do these days. I saw it on Facebook a couple of days ago, but I am going to share it with you today because it's so profound. And yet, profound as it may be, you'd be surprised how different people filter and interpret such a message. First, let me read it. Then we'll talk about the reaction that I've seen. Now the story, or I should say it's written as though it's an incident that actually happened to somebody, but it is being told in the first person. Whether this person is just trying to make it sound realistic, whether this person telling the story is fictitious, a character created by an author for effect, or whether this person really existed and this incident really happened, I have no idea, but I have more than an idea about how important the story and the message is. And so, it begins. When I was a high school sophomore, decades ago, my world history teacher was Mrs. Holloway, but we all called her Granny Holloway. She was a slight woman, scarcely 5 feet tall, seemingly fragile, but full of vim and vinegar. You know the type. She could speak for hours about the fall of the Roman Empire, the Inquisition, the Industrial Revolution, and the World Wars. She never sat while she lectured, never stood at a lectern, but moved around the room, making eye contact with all of her students. She was demanding, too, and I can't remember how many papers were sent back to me because she would note, "You can do better than this, Miss Shale." One day, during class, an office aide interrupted her lecture to hand her a note. She read it silently, apologized, and said she needed to leave the room. We knew it had to be important because Granny Holloway stopped lectures for no one. We sat in the room talking to one another when the door opened and in walked Mrs. Abels, another teacher in our high school. She explained to us that Granny had been faced with an emergency, a serious one, and it was questionable if she would even be returning to finish out the semester. We were stunned. Would we get a chance to tell her goodbye? Would we get updates so we would know she was okay? Mrs. Abels assured us that we need not worry, that Granny was safe but needed time away, and that the best thing we could do for her and the best way we could show our devotion to her was to be cooperative with her replacement. Mrs. Abels confirmed that she had been asked and had agreed to step in as Granny's replacement. Cheer up, she told us. This could be a good thing. Other teachers still believed in endless homework and projects with deadlines and hard work. She would not bring that into our class. She believed in clean slates. If there were grades that we did not like, she could give us a chance to bring them up. She asked us what suggestions we had to make the semester a better learning experience. Someone mentioned that lectures were boring and we wanted more films. Done, she said. Someone else mentioned that a free day now and then would help us if we needed to catch up on work in other classes. She didn't see a problem with that. She asked us how we felt about an end-of-the-semester party. Yeah? Sounded very good to us. And on and on. Mrs. Abels listened intently and agreed to all of our suggestions, continually emphasizing that her concern was that we have a good learning experience and enjoy the semester. She also reminded us that we were lucky to not be sent to other classes where we would be working to catch up, and that, of course, this was all for Granny. Near the end of the period, shortly before the bell rang, the door opened, and Granny sauntered in with her usual Granny Holloway attitude. "How did they do?" she asked. "Marvelous," said Mrs. Abels. "They were completely in my hands." Granny then faced us and said, "And that, my students, is how a dictator takes over a nation. Not with guns, or tanks, or laws, or mandates. They do it using a poster child and promises and gifts and protection from an enemy. I can't remember a lesson all through 12 years of public school that made such an impression on me and has stayed with me. We are among wolves in sheep's clothing. Many are being deceived with a false light. I was falling for it myself until the Lord opened my eyes to see and my ears to hear. Stay awake and buckle up. Put on the full armor of God we are going to need in the days to come. No man is going to save the world. Jesus Christ is the only way, truth, and the light. All right, my friends, and that is the story that I shared on Facebook a few days ago. I saw it on Facebook. I put it on my own Facebook page. Since then, I have watched the reaction of Facebook friends hitting the like button, sharing it to their own pages. I know why most of them like the article, because the Facebook friends that interact with me the most are quite candid about their beliefs. I did, however, get a comment from Tim, a good guy. You've heard him on this show before. We often disagree, but he is a good guy. Tim wrote the following, and I don't disagree necessarily with what Tim wrote. I'm making a guess as to whom he wanted to apply it to, but let me allow Tim to speak for himself. He wrote fairly generically, named no names, but this is what he said. Tim says, "This is a good story to show how populist leaders are so dangerous. They analyze what the people want, tell them what they want to hear, feed on their passions and desires, and then absorb power feeding into those desires." Well, Tim, I agree that this is often the deed. As for them all being dangerous, like many words and like many titles, the title populist is neutral. Merriam-Webster defines populist in the following way: a member of a political party claiming to represent the common people especially. They also say a believer in the rights, wisdom, or virtues of the common people. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. Of course, if the kinds of rights that people want are bad, if the kinds of virtues that they claim to be virtuous are really evil, if what they call wisdom is not really wisdom, then somebody feeding into that can be a real bad thing. But the people having a desire, that's neutral. A populist appealing to the people, that's neutral. We have to see a specific example before we can give commentary on the right or the wrong of it. And I am guessing, Tim, only guessing, I am guessing based on conversations we've had together over the radio and on Facebook that you are thinking right now about Donald Trump. Not the only populist, I know you probably think of other people too, but in modern times, in recent times, I believe you're thinking of Trump as the obvious populist. Either way, regardless of Tim's beliefs, many absolutely will take this to be talking about Trump. For all I know, that may have even been the intention of the writer. Again, I don't know who this writer is, but since the writer was allowing us to fill in the blanks, obviously it becomes a matter of interpretation. Certainly, as a Christian, I agree with what this person said, that we need to put our faith in God, and no one man is going to save this nation, be he Trump, be him anybody. I'm totally on board with that part. And also, for the sake of Tim or for the sake of anybody else listening, I do agree that Trump was a populist. And when he first started running in 2016 primaries, I spoke against him often on my radio show and in some of my columns. He seemed like a loose cannon who could do anything. I had no idea if he would keep his promises or not. I voted for him over Hillary because I viewed Trump as a roll of the dice. Hillary was not. She was not a roll of the dice. She was clear about what she planned to do, and she had quite the track record that said other things about her. Trump did keep the high majority of his promises after getting into office, much to my pleasant surprise. At least as many as possible, considering the amount of times he was dragged into court having judges overturn him, considering the fact that he was constantly under investigation for things that he's now been exonerated over. But he did, while he was running, appeal to many people. Absolutely he did. He did read their desires. But what were the desires in this particular case? Freedom, for the most part. freedom to make our own choices, freedom to keep more of our money and have less of it taxed. Since freedom cannot exist without security, he also appealed to those who wanted us to watch our borders better, not to keep Hispanics away or any other people group from entering the country legally, but to keep anyone from anywhere in the world from entering illegally. Trump also promised energy independence. He promised things that were constitutional. He promised things that made sense. Now, Joe Biden is not a populist. Many of the people that voted for that guy are embarrassed by him. Many were embarrassed before. They just thought that compared to Trump, he might be better. It is the Biden administration. It's a plurality that we're looking at. This party controlling the House and the Senate, along with their governors controlling certain states, they, pluralistically, they together are offering the kinds of things a clever, power-grabbing populist would offer. Mostly, they're offering a lot of free stuff that they're not going to be able to deliver. Not ultimately, stuff they cannot possibly give us within the budget that they promote, within the taxes that they ask for, within the de-escalation of energy independence and the open borders and the lawlessness, such as allowing people to go into stores openly and steal, the anarchy in the streets because the police are being defunded or ordered to stand down. I would call it a perfect storm, but it's a manufactured storm. This is not sustainable. All these things happening to our country at one time, it's not sustainable. They know it's not sustainable. It is going to crash our capitalistic system, and that is the point. It will be replaced with pure Marxist rule. They're not going to call it Marxist. They're going to call it socialist because that's a nicer sounding word. You want to talk about a power grab? You want to talk about promising a lot of things to people and then absorbing power away from the people to yourself? This is a power grab of the worst order. And it not only limits financial freedom, they are trying to suppress the First Amendment. They are trying to suppress the Second Amendment. They are even laying the groundwork for abolishing the Constitution altogether by calling it nothing but a document written by white slaveholders. A lie. A half-truth. Some of our forefathers did own slaves. Some of our forefathers did not own slaves. Some of our forefathers vehemently spoke out against slavery. It's a half-truth. And again, a half-truth is a lie. In what way exactly did Donald Trump try to stifle our rights to freedom of speech? Who was jailed for speaking against Trump? The guy was compared to Hitler every day over the internet, by the media. The fact that people could criticize him so freely without him weaponizing his Justice Department as Biden has done. The fact that judges ruled against him time and time again. The fact that he could be removed from Twitter. The President of the United States removed from Twitter. What exactly was the gained power? What exactly was the financial power? The man didn't even take a salary. Twice he was impeached. He wasn't convicted, but twice he was impeached. The second time, days before he planned to peacefully leave office, which he said he would do, which he did. Once again, the word populist itself is neutral. There are good populists, there are bad populists, but the kind that wants to absorb power away from the people he's catering to give himself complete dictatorial control, that kind of power grab, that kind of populist, well, then I must ask the question, will the real populists please stand up? This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.